The recordings have been started. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Nicola. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On today's PPSC PDP call on Thursday, the 13th of May, we have Jeff Newman, Alex Gakuru, Tatiana Kramtsova, James Bladel, Avery Doria, Alan Greenberg, Paul Diaz. From staff, we have Margie Milam, myself, Gisela Gruber-White. We have apologies from Marika Konings, Glenda Saint-Géry, and Wolf Ulrich Knoben. So I could please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Jeff.
Thank you very much. Good morning and good afternoon. I don't think it's evening for anyone on this call, although I could be wrong. As was said, it's May 13th, 2010. This is our weekly meeting of the PDP work team. It's some low attendance today, but I still think we can make some progress on the call. And basically what we're going to do on this call is go over the flowchart. Oh, sounds like someone's in traffic there. We're going to go over the flowchart, and then we're going to also go over some of the questions that were asked on email that we were hoping to get answers to. A reminder that comments are due to the full report that's out there by May 15th, which is 2 days from now, so that we can update the draft and publish something by the Brussels meeting. And so those of you that have not provided your comments on all of the five sections plus the overarching plus the some of the we know we're going to be revising some of the recommendations in the executive summary in the next week or two, depending on the answers that we get to some of the questions. But please, it's getting close to crunch time, and so we need to actually get something out before the Brussels meeting. And so please provide your comments in the next day or two. So that said, are there any questions on what we're going to go over or on that? The other administrative item is talking about the Brussels meeting, although I don't believe Glenn is on, and I'm not sure, Margie, if you have an update on the schedule. I think it's one of those things that we're all kind of waiting to see.
Yeah, I do have an update. I don't recall, but give me a few minutes, and I'll tell you guys. I'll look through my email. I do have an update. I just need to pull up the document.
Okay. Yeah, we can cover that in a little bit. So with that said, why don't we? If you remember on the last call, one thing that people had asked about, actually for a couple calls now, is to have some sort of visual layout of all of the items that we were talking about and how the recommended PDP process, at least as we've discussed, would be. And so there's a nice color-coded chart that's in front of us right now that's 3 pages long, although the first chart's only, the first page and a half or so. And so I thought that, Margie could just go through and just explain this to us, and then we could just spend a few minutes talking about it and seeing, is this helpful? Is this something we'd like to include in our report? Are other people going to find it helpful? Things like that. So, Margie, you want to take us through that?
Sure, yeah. This is Margie. What Marika and I did was try to look at the changes that have been suggested in the group and put together a visual chart, because we thought it would be helpful to see the flow, and then from this document, once everyone's in agreement that the steps are correct and all of that, that would lead to the development of the bylaws that are incorporate all of the recommendations that we've talked about. And so and particularly, we thought it was useful to have on one page or two pages the recommendations, so that we could go through the process of analyzing whether they are something that should be incorporated in the bylaws or something that should be in the rules of procedures. So Marika has designated B for bylaws, meaning that it's the type of recommendation that's important and should be, formally documented in the bylaws, versus the rules of procedures that might be something that's a little more fluid and can be changed. And so she's referenced that as an R. Alan, do you have a question about this before I go in more detail?
Yeah, well, the first question is, do we want to take questions as we go along or not?
Yeah, I think that makes sense because
I'll have one for the first box when you get to it.
Okay. Head. Okay, so we start off the process as trying to identify whether a consensus policy is a potential outcome. Because on our last call, we were talking about the fact that the GNSS Council works on all kinds of things, and some of it isn't what we consider a true PDP. Things like the Who Is Study reports came when we just talked about last week. And so we thought that at the onset you'd need to have just a high level, and I think we all do this intuitively, but we've just never formally documented it. Is a consensus policy a potential outcome? And if it's a potential outcome, then you have to go through the process that we're all working on. If it's something like Who Is Studies, affirmation, stuff. What are all the other things that the GNSO Council does? Then you go the other path and you just follow the GNSO working group guidelines. So, Alan, is this where you have a question?
Yeah, I don't think the term consensus policy is the right keynote to trigger this. When we're talking about scope, we've made reference to the old definition that people thought it meant, is it within the picket fence? And the current definition we're using and the advice we got from legal counsel is that is it within the GNSO scope, which is a wider field than just picket fence consensus policies. So my understanding is we could be doing PDPs, which do not have consensus policy coming out of it, but nevertheless have policy coming out of it. So I think consensus policy is too narrow a focus to trigger it, because consensus policy must be within picket fence, I thought.
So, Alan, do you have any other, we were talking about this time is how we delineate, what must go through this process we're setting up.
I think is policy potential outcome, or GNSO related policy, because I think consensus is used purely to maybe in lower cases it's a more general term. Certainly with an uppercase consensus it applies to the consensus policies as defined in the registrar and registry agreements, which happen to be different right now, but ignoring that.
Yeah. What do you think, Margie?
Yeah, I agree with Alan. I had that similar concern. I didn't know how to describe this process we all do intuitively, so I use the word consensus policy, but I think he's right. He might go into something starting a PDP that isn't intended to be a consensus policy.
We use words in so many different conflicting, confusing ways. I think we need to try to avoid that where possible. And here, GNSO-related policy or policy within the GNSO scope is a potential outcome.
Jeff, this is James. Alan, can you provide an example of a policy that is not a consensus policy? I'm just trying to wrap my mind around this a little bit better.
Well, a couple. I mean, the classic one is PDP 06, the one on contractual terms, which was somewhat ill-fated, although it has had some impact on the contractual terms within the new GTLDs. Post-expiry domain name recovery, as the scope was drafted by council, could include best practices and things like that. I mean, it may well end up with some consensus policy, but it wasn't limited to that.
So was the intent, Margie, was the intent just where it's a possible outcome of the group that we need to follow this process, not that it's an inevitable outcome, but just where it's a possibility.
Jeff, you raised the issue that I was going to say. It's just if it's a possibility. So think of, fast flux or something. It's possible that we can come up with a consensus policy, but it doesn't have to be that. Because I didn't know how to document what Alan is talking about, and the things like studies and affirmation work and all the other stuff at GNSS Council, is that policy? I don't know. We've gone into this debate over what is policy, what is not policy, and how do you define it.
Although I don't think we've ever done it, the GNSO could be in a position where they believe ICANN staff need to do something, and they're not doing it. And the normal processes of suggesting and talking don't do it. The GNSO could come up with a PDP which would nearly force the board to adopt a resolution that staff do something, which is not a consensus policy, but it's wholly within the GNSO scope.
Yeah, that's actually a good point, Alan. Aubrey, you had your hand up. I don't know why it was lowered. Do you have something to...
Because I listened a bit more and got myself confused again. Basically, this is Aubrey. I realize the word policy versus practice is not as bright a line as one would want it to be, but I tend to believe that anything that is a more policy than practice can follow the PDP route, where you have to ask that first issue question. You have to ask that scoping question. And so if there is a scoping question at the beginning of the road, then it follows the yes route. And it's only if it's the bright line is, there's no scoping here. There's process. For example, with the who is testing, and I mean not testing, but studies, that was quite easily not a policy, but a process bit of work that was being done. And I think trying to use that kind of line is if there's any question about scoping, it is policy. Whereas if it's a group to recommend a practice to, decide on how seats are going to be apportioned in a group, to decide on any of the other things that the GNSO does that are not policy related but are in some sense practice related, would fall through to the working group, straight to the working group method as opposed to needing to be scoped.
So, Aubrey, let me ask you a question, and Alan as well, and James, and it's actually a debate right now that's in our own stakeholder group within the registries. But there's a motion that's coming up to the GNSO Council at this next meeting, which is recommendations by the IDNG, so it's an IDN working group that the Council set up, not through any PDP process, but just a group that they set up. And the motion is to make recommendations on changes to the guidebook with respect to, without getting into details, it's basically with respect to IDNs. That did not follow a PDP process to set up the group. In fact, there's been no public comment periods to discuss it, and the GNSO Council is going to vote on it at their next meeting next week, I guess. So the debate in my own stakeholder group and what I've said is I don't think the GNSO Council should even vote on it. I think it's probably something that the IDN group could send directly as the IDN group to Kurt as comments to the DAG, right, the Draft Applicant Guidebook. But for the Council to vote on it without it going through any process, without it going through any public comment periods, I just think is, from my own opinion, is kind of contrary to some of the stuff that we've all been recommending here. But putting that aside, Aubrey, is that policy? Is that administrative? Is that, what is that? And so, Alan, you have your hand raised.
No, let Alan go first.
Okay, I would, now, I have to confess up front that I was part of this IDNG group and part of the group that sent this thing in. I think that this one is asking for purely a practice change in the DAG, which is something that the council can do if it doesn't have a difference of opinion on it. But you're right, the IDNG group could indeed have sent it, or any group of people together could have sent it. But it's just basically looking at the DAG and saying, hey, you know, you do an extended evaluation for everything except this one category. We think there should be an extended evaluation for this one category. It doesn't create policy. It merely says, you know, we think there's an issue in the practice. So I think that, you know, in that kind of thing, leaving aside whether the council should or should not vote on it question, I would say that this would be a practice issue, not a policy issue. There's no, and as the policy issue that this group was never able to make a recommendation on is, you know, what kind of things should they consider and how should they consider them, and getting into more of the minutia of IDNG than you would ever want to think about in a nightmare. But, you know, the fact of there being such a thing, that it is not a policy issue, it's a practice issue. Thanks.
Right, and I'll go to Alan in a sec. But you just said something that's interesting. The creation of it, it could have resulted in policy, and therefore, according to this chart, should have been done through a PDP.
If I can correct, this was a drafting team that was sent away to do charters. It could not arrive at a charter for the stuff that might have been policy. It just came out with this one particular issue that the group felt was not a policy issue, although we didn't discuss it in those words, was not a policy issue, but just a missing thing from the DAG that by parallelism type of analysis should have been there.
Okay. Alan?
Yeah, I guess perhaps my lifetime is shorter in this, and I don't take nearly as rigid a position as that. I don't think it's the question is purely whether it is policy or not. The bottom line is, if council votes on something that has policy but has not gone through the PDP process, it doesn't have the same weight. It doesn't require that the board adopt it unless the board is massively against it. It simply says, this is something that the GNSO has reached consensus on. Without all of the benefit of public comment, without all of the benefit of the checks and balances that are in a PDP process, it's still input into the board or into the overall ICANN processes, but it doesn't have the weight that a PDP does because of the checks and balances in the process that we're building into the formal PDP. So I don't find it objectionable that the GNSO could pass policy advice if they can get a consensus without the PDP. It just doesn't have the same weight.
Well, let me ask a question a little bit different way then. Even into your explanation, though, this issue should follow the working group guidelines, right? Put aside what actually happened in this case. So if this were a new case that comes to the GNSO, and so they say, look, we want to work on something that we believe is an issue in the draft applicant guidebook, whatever version it was on at the time, and so we want the council to put together a drafting team to kind of discuss some potential comments that we want to make to this, your recommendation would it still be, look, we should at least have some guidelines, therefore we should still go through the working group guidelines that they're developing, even if we don't go through the PDP.
I think the bottom line is that's what council is there for, to decide how much process was used, to say if one person comes back and comes up and says, hey, I have a great policy recommendation, and everyone in council looks at it and says, that wasn't vetted by anyone, no one else participated, we're going to reject it based on process, not based on we don't like the idea, based on process, and that's wholly within council's right to do that. If, on the other hand, everyone looks at it and shakes their head and said, why didn't we think of that? We unanimously support it. Then they can approve it. It's still not a PDP and doesn't have the weight of a PDP. But, you know, the at-large or the SAC gives advice to the board. The board is not bound to follow it. And the details of the process they followed are not written in the bylaws, but it's still advice which may have some value.
I'm going to go to Alex and Avery, but that would almost be a third arrow on this chart. That would be I'm not sure how to define that, but you almost described a third arrow.
We're talking about something that isn't a PDP at all. It's just another process the GNSO may have, which may end up making a recommendation, policy or not. We're looking at the formal one, which ends up having a very strong weight. The board cannot ignore it unless they overwhelmingly disagree.
Well, the reason I say, and then I will go to Alex and Audrey, I apologize. The reason I said a third arrow, it's because if the question is this policy or practice, and the answer is yes, then it goes through, is it policy? And then if the answer is yes, and it goes through PDP. If the answer is no, right now on this chart, it would go through a working group guidelines. You're almost saying if it's no, it could also go through some other process that's not defined either by our team or by the working group work team. So that's why I was saying it's a third arrow.
I agree with you. I'm not sure it needs to be on the chart, but yes.
Okay. Let me go to Alex and then Avery.
Okay, thanks. Alex speaking. I'm just wondering, there were instances where we said we could be in a process and then halfway we find that maybe an issue arises and it's identified as a policy is required while you're in the process. So there might be a need somewhere of a narrow pointing backwards. If it's found to be this, it needs to go back so that it can now take the other route to follow the GNSO. And so I think there probably might be a narrow somewhere saying within an issue, a process, if it's found that a policy has been deemed that it will be needed, maybe it might be taken to the other route. The assumption we have on our starting point here is that we are starting afresh. Nothing has happened before, and therefore we are now starting on consensus on the issue identification. But we've come across issues midstream, and I think that was like the implementation issues. We gave that example a couple of calls ago. So that's just what I wanted to contribute to this discussion. Thank you.
Yeah, and Alex, I think it's a good point because, essentially, that's almost what what's the group? The RAP, the Registration Abuse Policy, is a working group now. It's not a PDP, although it actually at the beginning followed a lot of the same things that a PDP would. Essentially, it was decided that there would be this team that would look at the issues and recommend which issues should be part of a formal PDP, and that's what their report's basically going to say. You know, the initial report said, and then the final report will say, you know, these are items that we think we would recommend to have formal PDPs. So it's almost like that, where the group was just set up to figure out which issues maybe potential PDPs or recommend them. Avery?
Yeah. Thanks. I actually find myself agreeing with both you and Alan. I think, indeed, an issue was identified, and is going back to your example, an issue was identified by this drafting team that was set out to do charters for something else. It identified a side issue while it was doing its study, its work. It was not what it was sent out to do. It's just in the process of its discussions. It found this issue. Now, it's sending this issue with a recommendation that this issue can be cleared by simply sending a letter saying that. Of course, now the council gets this, and the council can say, yeah, they're right. This is a small little thing that can be dealt with by sending a letter. We all agree to send a letter. Let's send a letter. It could say, this might be policy. Let's go down the scoping issue and see what's happened. Or it could say, you know, they're right, there's an issue here, but we think it needs more work, and, you know, it doesn't matter that we'll be too late for DAG-V4 and so on and so forth. And so, yeah, let's start a working group on it. So I think you're right. I think there is an arrow pointing out of an issue's been identified and you decide to do something else, which includes we don't want to do nothing. We want to send a letter. We want to send it to our prioritization group and see if this is something we should work on in 2012. Any number of other avenues that one could take other than, yes, get the issue scoped, or no, start a working group.
And in this case, actually, this is internal within my own stakeholder group, but my recommendation is, so I don't know if it'll actually come out of it that way, but, you know, one recommendation could be, hey, you know, the council could talk about it and say, you know what, this thank you IDN group for working on it. Why don't you guys send the letter to the board coming from you all as a working group, but, you know, because we haven't gone through any process of getting stakeholder feedback and other things, we as a council shouldn't necessarily vote on it, but you guys should go ahead and thank you for your work, and if stakeholder groups agree with it, then they can always later on sign on to the letter or say we agree. But that's an option too. That's kind of what.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is Aubrey again. I think there's an indefinitely large number of possible, you know, options that one could take. By the way, just so it's clear, the letter was being sent to implementation team staff and just copied to the board, I think.
Right. So then Margie, trying to bring it back to what we do with this first element of the chart. And
sure,
I know we're coming along. Yep.
That's Margie. What I think would be. I think we replace follow working group guidelines, GNSO working group guidelines with other GNSO process. Something generic like that, so it's not tied to having to have a working group. And then I think in the first one, I think you just say issue identification. Is a policy a potential outcome? And the only thing I wanted to kind of point out here, and I don't know how we could clarify it, is that the process, I mentioned consensus policy because that's required to go through the PDP process, but we don't have to be that limited. The PDP process could be for other things. It's just that if it is for consensus policy as one potential outcome, you have to go through the process. And then anything else would be voluntary instead of mandatory. So if there's other issues that may not, you know, it may produce a best practice or whatever, but the council believes it's the right thing to do to go through the PDP process, then you know, we certainly wouldn't prohibit that.
And is there a way to draw another picture into or another box into this, which is if they've gone through some other process and then it turns out through their work that, may result in a this may result in something that people want to put through the process. Is there another entrance into it, into this? Does that make sense? I'm sorry, I didn't say that very well.
I think that's right. And so if my other box says other GNSO process, we would do, I think what we would do is like we do with the other ones where we have issue scoping, we got a separate page on issue scoping. We would have a separate page on other GNSO process, and we'd kind of identify some of the things we've talked about. And have one process include, you know, if results in an issue that needs further policy analysis, you know, refer back to the issue scoping step or something like that. So we could actually, you know, expand out so everyone understands the kinds of processes the GNSO Council goes through, and that you could still end up in a PDP if through that process, you know, an issue is identified.
Okay, let me go to Aubrey and then to Alan.
Hi, this is Aubrey again. I think it's quite reasonable to have at the very top there, is it a consensus policy? Yes. And then another decision box that says it's not a decision, you know, it's not a consensus policy, then whatever wording you pick for, is this a policy thing that you really want to do the heavyweight PDP process on? Yes, no. And then following the working group guidelines. I'd like to point out that the discussion we were having was one where it was in the working group guideline, first step of, you know, drafting team go away and figure out how to do issue X, and this was just something else that came out of it. So we were already in that greenish box. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay, and then Alan?
Yeah, one of the things that doesn't come out in this chart, it may be obvious to us, but it may not be obvious to someone looking at it from a fresh viewpoint, is that there are decision boxes here which aren't shown. You know, for instance, out of the issues report, there is a decision box, do we hold a PDP or not? So, that, you know, there's another stub arrow coming out of it saying, no, it's either dropped completely or it goes through some other GNSO process.
Jeff, if I can respond, for each of these boxes, we're going to have further subpages, you know, that go through that analysis. Because we wanted to have on one page kind of the really high level, and then as we, you know, we've gone through this process in this group and identified all kinds of issues, there'll be subpages that talk about the various steps within that process. Because you're right, Alan.
Good. That comes to my next point. There are decision processes in many of these boxes that are buried right now in the box, and I think the one kind of things we're talking about are within that area. That if we're trying to end up with consensus policy, capital C, it must go through a PDP in order to pass it. That's contract related and bylaw related. The other ones may go through PDPs, you know, for any of the other thing. If we want to go through the heavyweight process, and you know, if there's sufficient merit in doing that, or if there might be a consensus policy coming out of it, and I think those are buried in the details, and we may be looking at this with too fine tooth a comb for the level that this chart is trying to represent now, and if so, that may be my problem for starting it.
Alan, I think you raised a really good point, because I was struggling in coming up with that first box, what the right question was, and I think this discussion really clarified what we're talking about, so I think it was useful.
Okay. So let's try to move. I think the other boxes are pretty, are not as... hopefully won't take as long to go through. So if we could just kind of go through some of these, I would like to spend the bulk of the remaining time on the questions that have come up on the list. So if Margie, you could just go through the boxes, and I ask that if people have questions, that they could either put it in email, or if they really believe it's something that needs to be answered now, obviously, I don't want to stop discussion, but just trying to move it along.
Okay, sure. Sure. So obviously, the next step is the issue scoping step, and like as I indicated, we'll have a separate page on that, and it's further down on this. Then we go to the requesting an issues report, and it talks about the three parties that can request an issues report. We've highlighted that the board, because when the board requests the issues report, that it goes straight to the development of the issues report, and it doesn't go through the council voting process. So we've highlighted that with the advisory committee and the council, you have the vote thresholds that are specified in the bylaws. And then we have a public comment periods, and that's a question as to whether they're required or not required. We have the initiation of the PDP, the development of the charter drafting team, the adoption of the charter and the voting thresholds that would apply to the adoption of the charter. And then we move on down to the creation of the working group, and then we've got side processes for the deliberations, the public comment periods, constituency statements. And then as we go down to the publication of the working group initial report, And then the steps that get undertaken in that process, such as the public comment period, the review of the public comment period, and the deliberations in producing the final report. And then on the next pages, the next page, we go through how the processes works from the final reports to the council deliberations to the report to the board, board vote, and implementation. And as I indicated, we would have processes, separate sub-pages that go into the detail on this. And so on the very next page, page 3, we've got what Marika put together for stage 1. And this is probably where I think we use a lot of input from the group on how to make this helpful. What initially Marika had included all the recommendations in each of these bullets, but it became very unreadable. And so what we tried to do to make it more simple was to identify which recommendations fall in what stage. And so you'd have to refer back to the initial report where we have, for example, recommendation 6. And then in the parentheses is R for it being more appropriate for rules of procedures. And then there's other recommendations where we have a capital B, which means that we think it should go into the bylaws. And these are purely suggestions to get the discussion started. What I did suggest to Marika was if we were to do this, that we maybe have at the bottom of the page a little box that actually summarizes in real shorthand what recommendation 1 is, you know, what recommendation 2 is, so you can get the gist of it. We wanted to make sure that something like that could work before we did that. So you can see, you know, how we would try to provide more detail on the subsequent pages. And I think this is really, I'd like to hear from you guys whether you think the format on these subpages works and what kind of information would be helpful.
Okay, thanks, Margie. Anybody have any questions? So while people are thinking about that, so you did say that somewhere on this page you'll have, you know, like a one word or two word as to what the recommendation related to?
Yeah, because I thought otherwise you have to keep flipping back to the initial report, and that's not very useful. But if it's something like, you know, issue scoping, like I think the first recommendation has to do with having a manual, to refer to, guidelines or something. So, yeah, we would have a 3 or 4, word topic that describes what the recommendation relates to.
Okay. Anybody else with any questions on this? I like it. And as Alex said, I think these charts will help us prepare for the public presentation in Brussels. So I actually think it's a really good idea, and it's something that people who are visual can see. Aubrey?
Yeah, I have a question. I too think it's a good idea. And I think the key word explaining that, recommendation 1, or R1, because you'll probably get tired of writing recommendation, is a good idea. Do we have already a sort of general principle that tells us which things are going into bylaws and which things are just going into that, or is that a decision that's already made? I just don't recall.
I think we've been – if I'm just trying to re-ask a question. Your question is whether we've decided on overall principles as to what should go in the bylaws and what should go in the rules or procedures. Is that your question?
Yeah. I mean, is that already a done thing? Because I don't remember that being a done thing, so I'm not sure.
But you're right. The way we've done it is I don't think we came up with overall principles. I think as we've been discussing topics, we've kind of discussed, is this something we think should go in the bylaws or is this something we should go in the rules of procedure? And it's I'm not sure we've developed that list of principles as to how we decided it. It just kind of was as we went along, which is why we're back and revisiting it now.
Okay, great. Okay, I was just not clear. One of the things that I think is great about doing these kinds of things is it's actually allowing you to test the process in a real way, other than obviously running a process. So I think it's great. Thanks.
Okay. Any other comments? So given that, Marty, I think what you're hearing or you're not hearing anyone against it, I think you guys did a good job, really good job, and I think you should just continue down this with, as you suggested, with, you know, maybe instead of saying the full word recommendation one, you just say R1, and, well, I guess you have an R for something else. Can you maybe create a key, a box, as to what some of the letters mean? And then also, like, so if you had R1 and then you had in a key box on the side saying R is for recommendation, and then create something else for rules of procedure, but, you know, and then had something in there in parentheses, you know, saying R1 relates to whatever it does, that would be great. So I think you guys are doing a good job. Alex, you have your hand raised?
Yes, just a comment. I actually think the report is good. I think I mentioned that on email, and I agree we move on to email. But I'm just thinking, if where there is a recommendation, whichever it is, might it be possible to have a link to our big recommendation report so that in case somebody wants to look at that details of that section of the recommendation, maybe a hyperlink. So it's just a quick thought that came to me, and I thought I should mention it, if it's possible on the chat. But if it's not, I will leave it. Thanks.
That's a very good idea, Alex. I'll check with Marika to see if we can do that. I think that'd be perfect.
Okay.
It certainly would be a lot easier to do on the wiki or on the, you know, on the web. It'd be hard to do in a presentation. But yeah, that is a really good idea if that could be done. Okay. Any other overall questions on this? And please, you know, send emails. I don't mean to cut off discussion, but just trying to move on to some of the other things. Okay. Seeing none, then Margie, you've raised your hand. So Margie, yes.
Oh, yeah, separate issue. You had asked about the time for the PDP group in Brussels. And we've got it down for Sunday morning from, hold on a second, 10:30 to 12:30.
Okay.
Okay.
I would still, because things can change, I would still recommend those that are going to Brussels, if you could be there at some point on Saturday, that would be great. I know Margie just said it's scheduled for Sunday, but things sometimes change.
They do change a lot, especially because some of the meetings relate to things that we have speakers. And so, like, for example, Kurt talking about new GTLDs or something, if his schedule changes, our schedule changes. So being there on Saturday is useful.
Okay. All right, so then moving on to the next subject, and I don't know, Margie, to post the document, the overall document, or should we just go to the emails and kind of raise them? Over the last week, Marika has, in accordance with our discussion, Marika has sent around separate emails, broke out some of the issues that need to be decided into 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I believe seven emails with different questions that are being asked. And again, we requested this as kind of a way to streamline. We don't really have any comments yet. They were sent around on Tuesday, but the emails, you know, for example, the first one that was sent out has the items in bullets that say for discussion consideration. And it's related to recommendation 7, which is the creation of the issues report. And it goes through the outstanding questions and then background on that. And by background, I mean things that we discussed during those calls or during the survey or in the report, essentially. It reprints what we have in there. So it gives you some background. I really encourage I know the working group work team has had some success with getting people to respond to individual questions as opposed to, you know, throwing everything out there. And so we're trying this to see if we get some comments. We haven't gotten any yet, but, you know, we'd really appreciate it if people could respond to these individual emails. So, okay, Margie's posted it up there now. So, for example,
this is recommendation 7.
Right. This is the first email that went out. So the questions are, you know, would the work team like to reassess its position as the review of all phases has been completed? One could consider including in the PDP rules of procedure recommendation for the entity requesting the issues report to indicate whether there are any specific items they would like to see addressed in the issues report, which could then be taken into consideration by the council when reviewing the request. In addition, it could be an option for the council and our staff to provide advice ahead of a vote on the request for an issues report. So I think those first few notes for discussion are staff questions and other questions that were put into the report. And then below that is, you know, our recommendation 7 was simply just no changes are recommended by the PDP work team to the bylaws at this point. However, the group may choose to reassess the completion of work on all of the phases. That was our recommendation to ourselves, right? That wasn't
right.
Right. That was our work team could reassess that. So I think the recommendation has to change. Either it says no changes are recommended at this point, or it could say no changes are recommended to the bylaws, but here's something we recommend to the rules of procedure. But we can't leave in there. However, the group may choose to reassess upon completion of work because we've in theory completed the work on all the phases. Does that make sense? So we need to recommend something. Alan?
Yeah, on one particular point, maybe I'm imagining it because I've had the discussion in other forums, but I thought we did have a discussion on the 15-day issue and said we need more flexibility in that. Maybe it's that discussion we've had routinely with PDP so many times that I'm imagining that we held it, that we had the discussion. I'm not sure.
So you are correct. We've had in other discussions the 15 days. I think this is 15 days for the staff.
Yeah, no, that's the 15 days I'm talking about. Because in the last few PDPs, that has been extended because it wasn't reasonable. Other PDPs, we've delayed requesting the issues report to accommodate staff. And I thought we had a discussion that the 15 days is just too tight a constraint if we wanted good work product out of it. But maybe we didn't have it in this group. I'm not sure, but if we didn't, we should.
Yeah, no, I believe we did.
I'm just surprised it's sitting there with the comments saying we didn't discuss it.
Well, it's not that we didn't discuss it.
Well,
I think what we had said is that we didn't recommend any changes to
the
bylaws.
Okay,
I think that may not be the aspect. So there is a discussion below that talks about, you know, what we actually discussed a number of things as to like a lightweight, you know, versus we discussed a lot of things about the issues report.
Yeah, I guess I'm just expressing surprise that we didn't definitively say this needs to be changed. So, okay.
Right. So, Margie?
I thought we had talked about the time period changing, but we didn't talk about what the time period should be, is my recollection.
Possibly.
I think that's accurate. James?
Yeah, we didn't discuss what the time period should be or make any recommendations. What we did was we kicked that over to our discussion of a prioritization because we recognized that 15 days could be subject to whatever their workload was at any given time. That's how I remembered it anyway.
And remember, the issues report can come from the request for an issues report can come from three different sources.
All the more reason to put the flexibility in.
Okay, so everyone should really read the discussion that's below it as to the PDP work team response. That's that's some of the items that we discussed. And then on email, you know, write back and say, okay, here's what I think is reasonable to put in there. Or, you know, is this even something that should be necessarily in the bylaws? Should we, in the bylaws, actually have something like this? I think a lot of us in the discussion said, yeah, we wanted to see certain mandatory elements in the issues report, but then could have rules of procedures of other best practices to put in the issues report as well.
Well, Jeff, in this case, since, as you point out, the issues report can be triggered by other groups, it's not a GNSO issue, so it can't be in the GNSO practices.
Well, no, I sort of. I mean, I think the GNSO, since we're going to be required to work on it, can have mandatory elements that must be in an issues report, regardless of who wants it. You know what I'm saying, Alan? So we could say, okay, yeah, we can't control whether an issues report is created, but staff, when you do create an issues report that we're going to have to look at, it's got to have these 5-10 things.
Oh, I'm not commenting on the content. I was talking about the timing.
Oh, okay, I see. So where the board recommends an issues report or requests an issues report, then it's hard for us to say, okay, you got to do it within 15 days.
Yeah,
so
I don't think we can even put a constraint on staff that way.
Margie, that's something to think about as to whether we can actually do it. I'm not sure I take as rigid of a view as Alan.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the bylaws now, so and I think it's done regardless of who, I mean, at least the intent in the bylaws is that it should be done regardless of who requests it. I don't think there was a distinguishment between where the request came from.
No, there wasn't.
Right, and I think it's appropriate for us to change that time. I mean, we need to have the bylaws reflect what should be done, and it's not a good idea to have bylaws have a date that can't be met.
I think our idea for flexibility, now that I'm thinking back to it, was a range of days, which could always be extended if staff has a reason, you know, comes to council and says, look, you know, there's all these other things on your plate, or our plate as staff, and so, you know, that range is still not attainable, you know, and GNSO Council can always or should be able to extend that. Avery?
Yeah, I guess I have a couple views on it. One, I definitely agree that we should not, A, have impossible times or times that are ignored. And you know, we've made such a practice of ignoring them for so long now. I think that 15 days is difficult. I think that if there was anything in the bylaws, it should basically be something that upon getting the request, you know, the staff has 5 days to give an estimate of how long it's going to take them. You know, or because if it's from the board or if it's from an advisory committee, it's not going through the council yet where the council can negotiate. What we've gotten into lately in the council, with, I guess, I don't know what they've done lately, but a while back was negotiate with staff saying, can you get it in 30? Yeah, we think we can get it in 30. Cool, then let's ask for it in 30. So either a negotiated time if it's going through the council, or a requirement that within a week they say, listen, it's going to take us 3 weeks. Listen, this one's tough. It's going to take us 2 months. And that kind of timing. But I think staff has to be free to look at its workload, to look at whether the person they need to do it, the expert that, you know, is that is totally booked for the next 2 weeks, and therefore there's no chance that they can even start it sooner to be able to give that information back. So thanks.
So I'm going to go to Alan in a sec, but what if there's, instead of having them have to come back with the actual issues report, perhaps within a certain time period or within the next meeting, they have to come, staff has to come with a recommendation as to how long it will take them to do the issues report, when they can have it done, and that's it, right? So it's basically just a requirement for staff to just come to the council by the next following the request for the issues report. And again, we have the general rule in there for others that if it's not, if the request doesn't go to staff before 7 days prior to the GNSO council, that would be moved to the following council meeting. But essentially, it's just you need to come to the council with a date or an estimated date for the delivery of the issues report. And then the council can discuss whether that's, you know, too long, too short, do better, we understand, whatever it is. Alan, do you want to comment on that, or you don't agree with that? Okay.
I'll disagree with it and give you my proposed solution. I disagree because that puts council in the path of a request for an issues report which was not requested by it and may have absolutely no interest in it. And I don't think that's anyone's benefit. The process allows issues reports to come from three different places. We decided that was appropriate early in the game, and I think council cannot be involved in that process and agree to something which the requesting body did not agree to. I believe what should be there is a simple statement saying it should be done in 15 days, or we can pick another number, but I think 15 is completely acceptable, or another time as agreed to by the requesting body. Although I understand it was done in the past, these requests for issues reports are no longer tossed over the wall to staff. There is always discussion ahead of time, at least there has been in the ones I've been involved with, and I don't think we're going to revert to coming up with an issues report out of the blue and requesting it with no opportunity for discussion ahead of time in terms of scoping it and in terms of the time that it will take. So I would simply say put a time and then add the caveat or other or some other time as agreed to by the requesting organization. And I think we're completely covered. It that maps exactly to the process that we've gone through in all of the last requests for issues report by both at large and the GNSO, and I think it's completely workable.
The date you said was 15 or 50.
I said 15. I said the number there is about as short as one could imagine is reasonable, and I see no reason to change the minimum one for a fast pass because urgency is involved. But I think the norm is going to be a longer time as discussed by the relevant people. If we feel it must be 21 calendar days, fine, I can live with that. But I don't think it's crucial because I think it's going to have to be a negotiated issue.
So remember, at the bottom of this discussion, and I'll go to Margie, we talk about some additional things or some recommendations as to what should be in the issues report, and so there's some more detail that we've put around it. So when you're talking about the time frame, you know, we're asking them to do more than maybe what they've been doing, or maybe not. Maybe it's just a reflection of what they've been doing.
Yeah,
Mark, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I did. In response to Alan's thing about the the board request, I don't think it's appropriate to negotiate with the board because they don't really act outside of their board meetings, and I think we saw this in the, the VI response, for example. You can't get a timely response to basic court questions because they have their skill and their needs to, whatever they've got other issues. But maybe what you do is, and the GNSO Council, even in that case, is still involved. Yes, they don't vote to approve it, but they're going to be involved. They're going to discuss it. They're going to set up the working group. They're going to set up a, council liaison. So that it's still part of their process. And so I don't see anything wrong with allowing the council to set the time. I do think the reason that the bylaws had the 15 days, I don't recall because I wasn't really that active in ICANN years and years ago, but it could have been that sometimes staff either was delaying it or not taking, responding quickly enough. And so, that's probably why the 15-day period was there to begin with. We've kind of moved away from that, but you may want to include something like, not to exceed and have an end date or something so that it just doesn't go on forever and have it be a range of
you know, of time periods where our issues report is, you know, is timely.
Okay, Alan, you have a comment on that?
Yeah, I don't think what I was describing was negotiations between the council and staff, or between the board and staff, or at large, or ALAC and staff. All I was saying is that when one puts this together, there always are some corridor discussions. And if I'm sitting on the board and crafting the resolution to request it, I'm stupid if I haven't at least unofficially talked to staff and found out, you know, some thoughts of what's going on. And there's an opportunity to put a reasonable number in any motion of whatever body it is requesting the issues report. And as far as I can see, that happens already, and I see no reason not to institutionalize it. I can certainly live with what Margie is talking about, but I would not want to see it go to council action to determine that, because that adds weeks and weeks and weeks into the process, you know, which could change the 15-day into a 75-day process or something, or a 60-day process if it requires formal council action to agree.
Yeah, so I'm not – so just to clarify, what my proposal was just having staff come back to council and tell them what date they'll realistically have it done by. And it wasn't like
I think staff should come back to the body that requested it at the very least, not council. But
– okay. Aubrey?
Yeah, I think I'm agreeing with – what I understand your proposal to be, and was thinking like staff is given 5 days in which to say this is going to take us X long, and to give their date. And of course, if it's an outrageous date, then people will start yelling and screaming, so it wouldn't be an outrageous date. And just to leave it at that, that yes, there has to be a fixed term so that we don't have, you know, oh, you didn't tell us when you needed it kind of, you know, and yes, I expect that these numbers came out of some case of that there having been a hard case and people having made a silly rule. And I think it's enough to just sort of have a response time, not a response time with the report, but a response time to whomever asked for the report. Yep, this one's going to take us 22 days. You know, yep, this one's going to take us 10. Yep, we already had this one canned. You can have it in a week. You know, I just think that is a sufficient indicator. Just, you know, give them 5 days to figure out how long it's going to take them, who's going to work on it, et cetera.
Then there needs to be a cap in the bylaws, because although we have extreme goodwill and competent staff at this point, sometime in the future, we can't guarantee that we're not going to have staff basically stonewalling and saying it's going to take us 9 months.
But then we've got a bigger problem than the PDP.
Well, yes, indeed. But we're trying to craft
and the cap won't make a difference. I don't think we can make rules that will protect us against everything that might go wrong.
Okay, so it may not be, just to try to kind of combine both of them, it may not be a bad idea to have a cap in the bylaws. Obviously, that cap would not be 15 days, right? But so Alan, if you're recommending a cap, do you have a day period that we could recommend?
Well, I think if we put any cap there, it's going to be the number we use, to be honest. So I wouldn't want to see anything longer than 30 days. But in reality, I think longer than 30 days may be a reasonable target for any given PDP. But I'm worried that as soon as you put a cap there, that's the day it gets delivered. You know, work always exceeds the ability to do it, and
but
certainly something like this is the case.
But actually,
I'm just one voice, but I think it's an important issue, because I think it's what gives the PDP the weight of importance, is that indeed we don't want huge delays involved in even deciding whether we do one or not.
But I'd actually like to move on to some of the other questions. But
that's fine. I've made my point.
One thing I might recommend, and I know Margie's got her hand raised, but maybe it's a question for ICANN staff. Maybe you guys come back to us and tell us, given all of these things that we've recommended to be in there, why don't you come back to our group on email and say, look, we think this is the time that is a reasonable cap or is a reasonable time frame to do it or is a range. Because right now, I mean, this is primarily has been a staff issue, so I'd like to hear from them. Not necessarily we don't have to pick what staff gives us, but it'd be good feedback. Does anyone disagree with that? Margie, you have your hand raised, so maybe on this or something closely related.
Yeah,
but
it's similar. I do agree with Alan. If you put 45 days, it's going to end up, or whatever, it ends up being the longer period. The one thing, just a past experience, the only issues report that I wrote was the vertical integration one, and that took more than 30 days because it was requested right before Seoul, and we also had the STI work going on at the same time, and so that didn't get delivered until early, I guess, December. So sometimes it's the prioritization work that affects the time. I can take back to Liz and Marika and try to figure out, at least from our perspective, what works. Because I think that was an unusual case. Most of the time that, the issues reports get done, far quicker than that, and they'll have more information on how long it took us.
Well, I'm not sure it's that unusual, Margie. I know on the post-expiration one, if we had requested it when we were in a position to request it, it probably would have taken 45 days. But we, in fact, delayed the request because of discussions with staff and because we didn't want to have to force, change the formal 15-day process.
Right.
So that's why I like the idea of setting a minimalist time, which doesn't set a huge cap, which becomes the norm, but yet gives the opportunity for it to be 15 days or for it to be 90 days.
All right, so in the interest of moving it on, if Margie, you can come back, or Marika, come back and basically say, this is, given these other elements that are in 4A through C below, this is what we think is reasonable. And then we'll discuss that, obviously, on the list and see what we can come up with. But for right now, this is really your issue.
Okay.
Okay, if we can jump on to the next series of questions, which I'm going through my own email here, relate to, I believe the next one was the 16, recommendation 16. Is that the next one you're putting up?
Yeah, give me a second.
Sure. Okay, so to go through while it's being put up, this relates to resources and prioritization, and what we had we didn't have a recommendation here. The concerns and questions were, should there be a maximum number of issues that could be taken into consideration at the same time, taking into account ICANN staff time but also volunteer workload, and should there be a fast-track procedure for emergency issues? We discussed this. And we all said there was overall agreement there should be a mechanism for prioritizing and planning PDPs over time. We discussed a bunch of ideas which were listed, and then the group noted it would be worth checking with the working group work team to see whether they considered this. I don't believe that they have. And then our other thing was some agreed that such a procedure, and this is for the emergency, could be developed, but more time would be required in order to do so. Issues would be considered. Issues to be considered would include how to demonstrate a higher need and how to avoid gaming, and some criteria suggested included, does the community consider it an emergency, and is the issue clearly outlined and a common goal clearly identified, and the ICANN board and units of council agree that there's urgency. So those are things that we discussed about it, and then the discussion items for this email are, in light of the ongoing CNSO Council prioritization activity, we may want to defer on that. We also might want to consider further input for the community on how a fast-track procedure could be devised that would allow for quick action. And And again, this relates to another recommendation 23 about expedited procedures. So,
hey, Jeff, I think I've got one. What recommendation are you focusing on?
This was 16.
16.
This is what you have up now. I just started reading at the bottom for the concerns and questions to give some background.
Okay, great.
Again, this is not one that we need to discuss now on the call, but want feedback on the list. Does everyone understand the – I don't want to, again, discuss the substance, but I just want people to understand what we're talking about here. And Avery's got, obviously, a comment on the whole GNSO prioritization, finding it confusing. And I must agree with Avery. I'm not – I've read some of the documents, but I'm not sure exactly what that all means. Margie, you have a comment?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's really important for us to do a fast-track procedure for emergency issues. Vertical integration is one of them where it would have been nice to have that we've all, agreed to in advance, and it somehow takes the, prioritization stuff into account. I agree with Avery, and I don't know how you do that, but we need to get some thought on to have a fast track procedure.
Yeah, there was a lot discussed on the subject, and I think James was certainly one who had asked the group, "What is an example of an emergency?" And you, Margie, have raised one. I'm not sure I agree with you that that was an emergency. When people had emergency in mind, it was because there was actual harm that was being done, not working around some board deadline, which was sort of arbitrary in its beginning, right? It was the board wants new GTLDs, and they're kind of opposing arbitrary deadlines. But, yeah, James put on the list, security and stability was the criteria for emergency, and I'm not sure VI would fit into that. And in fact, I think it was discussed, and that's probably something that James had said and others have said, that would be gaming the system, right? You're basically creating an emergency where none existed, and I call it an arbitrary emergency, an emergency set by the board because they wanted to meet a deadline, but that deadline didn't have anything to do with security stability.
Yeah, now that I think about it, you guys are right. That's more of a prioritization issue, not an emergency issue.
Right. Because then if you do classify something as an emergency, then you have these other procedures that have to be developed. So I think our conclusion was at the time was really to put it out there that, this group talked about, an emergency procedure, but couldn't, you thought about this as being the criteria of security and stability and couldn't think of an example where this was actually something that we needed. Alan, you have a...
Yeah, I think, although I don't have a concrete example, I think the fast path would be used in cases where the board took emergency action but is required to refer to the GNSO for a longer-term solution, we may well deem the board emergency action so offensive, that it was the only action they could take, but we really do need to develop some real policy on a fast path. So since the board has not often used its ability to take emergency action, it's hard to find concrete examples where we then also need to take fast path action. But I think that's the scenario where the situation would arise.
So just to clarify, are you talking about, and then I'll go to James and Margie, are you talking about when the board issues a temporary policy as defined in the contract? Okay.
The bylaws require it to go to the GNSO for GNSO applicable ones, I believe. And that's the kind of case where the GNSO may want to bypass as much of the bureaucracy as possible and come up with a longer-term solution which meets the test of a PDP, but is speeded up as much as possible.
Okay, and again, I'm not sure that, just to play a little devil's advocate, and then I'll go to James. I'm not sure that, what the temporary policies in the contract say a year, in theory, a PDP should be able to be done in a year without invoking any emergency procedures. And again, I say that's in theory. But let me go to Margie and then James.
Yeah, and I think I'm agreeing with guys that the contracts do talk about this temporary procedure process. So we might want to make sure that our process, would satisfy the needs of the contracts. But setting that aside, there might actually be, an issue where we want to move faster. And you think of some of the malicious conduct things, like conflict or suppose that there was a very specific domain issue that's clearly within scope and needed to be enacted quickly. We might want to have a procedure for that. So, I can't think of an example in the past that has happened, but I do think it is possible that high level, security and stability issue of, that relates specifically to domain names, might come up.
Okay, let me go to James and then Alex.
Yeah, Jeff, James speaking. And I think that the emergency authority for the board to do that, what Alan was describing, is also predicated on the topic being, or the context being, a security and stability issue.
Yep.
Is that correct? Okay. So I think
so.
We're all kind of singing from the same songbook here.
Yeah, I guess my one clarification, though, is that I'm not sure for that, even a temporary policy, that you need to have different you may just need a statement saying, look, this is the process, and even though there's flexibility in there, that for a temporary procedure, we just need to make sure that everything is done within a year.
I may be a little more cynical, Jeff. I think completing a PDP within a year is an emergency.
Okay. Let me go to Alex and then to Aubrey and then Alan.
Okay, thanks. I'm seeing a situation where maybe what Marge is talking about with the new GTLDs, maybe there is a concern and maybe some new issues may arise in as much as we didn't have emergencies in the past, hence the need to have some sort of mechanism of qualifying something as an emergency. Perhaps what we could think of is maybe the criteria of defining what an emergency would be subjected to before it is it's approved to be an emergency, and then maybe that way we can address the concerns of the future, because I'm sure maybe this is derived with the new GTLDs, but at the same time we create that criteria. I think that might answer both ends of the spectrum and sort of get a place where we know even if the emergency is going to arise, there is a cross-check of really justifying it as an emergency. Thanks.
Okay, Alex, and I think we tried to do that on some of the calls and going back to them. It's just I'm not sure we necessarily got agreement on what those were, except for, something, some imminent threat to security and stability, I think. But that's not saying we can't, or it's not saying we shouldn't put that out for comment, saying that, our response could be group did think that, there should be some process for emergencies. The group had had discussions as to what constitutes an emergency. These are some of the things that came up. We're seeking your input on this. And then, of course, once you do decide something's an emergency, what is the fast track process? What does it keep in? What does it leave out? Or does it just shorten things? Aubrey and then Alan.
Yeah. Okay, hi. I wasn't sure I was going to say anything until I heard we were all singing from the same hymn book. And then I knew I wasn't. And I may actually betray more cynicism even than James. If we say it's just security and stability, we know that people will find some way to call anything they want security and stability. That has always been the mantra of, if I want to say something's really, really important, I just call it security and stability, and anybody can argue as to whether it is or not. So I think that, and also to go in another way, I can think of things contractual that somebody may find some way to game a contractual condition in such a way that they can do harm to registrants. And I'm not even going to try and invent it at the moment, because if an invented example and it's at all realistic, somebody will do it. So, but I can imagine that such a thing could happen. So I could see that there would be a contractual emergency where something was happening and registrants were really, really being hurt by it, either financially or losing their names or something, imagining a loophole. So I think that anything that gets defined as an emergency would need to meet a very high criteria of just about everybody looking at it and saying, yeah, yeah, that is an emergency. And so I think it would have to be done through some sort of vote threshold that basically says, we've got a fast track, the fast track works this way, and you get into it with this kind of higher threshold vote. So in other words, you could start a PDP or you could start a fast track PDP and it's a different vote threshold or something like that. Thanks.
Okay. I think a lot of us in this group see your point, Aubrey, about how a lot of people will try to classify everything as an emergency, and I know that's something that James had certainly pointed out and others had pointed out when we had this full discussion a couple months back. Alan?
Yeah, I think I agree completely with Avery on that. I think we should not try to define emergency. If we could define them all that well ahead of time, we would probably be taking action ahead of time. People are very innovative, and the world changes. I think there's going to be enough pain involved in carrying out a fast-track PDP in terms of reprioritizing, allocating resources, council taking extraordinary action, that it's going to require that requiring a vote, and I'm don't think we need to discuss the threshold at this moment, is going to be clear enough to everyone to say yes. This is something, or at least a large number of people, this is something we need to do fast. And I think that enough is enough of a deterrent that we don't have to define it carefully. When one looks at how long it takes to do the process today, just to start adding up how many council meetings it takes to get to the point where a PDP is actually created. First council has to request the issues report. Then it has to get it back. Then it has to vote on it. At each stage, almost invariably, we have someone saying, we're not ready yet, there wasn't enough notice, and we defer a meeting. And it can easily take 5 or 6 meetings to get to the point where council even considers whether a PDP should be done, never mind actually starting to work on it. Then we end up having 2 meetings to discuss the charter. The process right now is very long, and doing it in a year from concept to finalization, I think, is virtually impossible. Not only difficult, but probably impossible. So I think we do need the process, and I think that there will be a high enough threshold in getting it approved that we don't need to define it all that carefully.
Okay. So I think that's probably, let me see if there's anyone. Yeah, probably a good place. I mean, Margie, you've probably captured what we've been talking about, or at least you can capture it afterwards to take some notes on this one. And then, look, there's 5 other emails that are out there that we don't have time to go through today, but we do need answers on fairly quickly, or at least discussion on the email. So please take the time this week, and I know I've said this every week, but if you could really make the time this week to do it, and have those discussions, even if it's just a one-sentence thought on one of the items, just to get discussion going, I would really appreciate it. And again, we also have the full report to look at as well. So, Aubrey, is this a new question, or is this?
Oh.
Bust up.
Sorry, no, I walked away from my computer, sorry.
Okay, so I think it's a good place in the call. We have a call next week, same time, But please, we need your comments in by the end of this weekend. So we publish the report on the 30th, I forgot how many days are on May, whatever the last day of May or the first day of June is to when those are due. Alex, you have another comment?
Yes, a quick apologies in advance for next week. I'll be in Ghana, so maybe I'll miss the call for next week. That's the only comment. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Alex.
Jeff, can we assume that the 15th date is really by the beginning of the start of work on the 17th? The date for commenting on the report.
It's more of a Marika who's got to assemble this, assemble the comments. But I guess I will speak for her. Probably by the beginning of her day on that Monday.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah, so I would assume that the beginning of her day on Monday in Europe, in Brussels, would probably be the real deadline, because I'm not sure she's going to look at it over the weekend.
She often does, but she shouldn't be required to.
Right. Okay.
And we shouldn't count on it.
Brian, you kind of gives us the weekend also, which is valuable time from my point of view.
Right.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome, Marjorie.
Bye, everybody.
Okay.
Bye, Jeff.
Bye.
Thanks. Marjorie?
Yeah?
Yeah, just if you could just pass on to Marika that I said it was okay. Do it by, the first thing on her Monday morning, which is actually the 17th.
I'll tell her that.
Okay. Thank
okay.
you.
Thanks, bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Nicola.